Computer, initialize holosuite.
Good evening, and welcome to another episode of The Fire Caves, a Star Trek Deep Space Nine podcast. I'm one of your hosts, Perry.
And I am your host, David. Tonight we're talking about Season 1, Episode 17, Dramatis Persona. Before we continue, you can find us on Twitter, Facebook, Spotify, and Apple Podcasts as The Fire Caves, a Star Trek Deep Space Nine podcast.
Absolutely. And please do feel free to find us. We know you're out there. We know you're listening. And we would love to hear from you. So find us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, all of them. All the social medias. If you search The Fire Caves, we'll come up. So join us. And we share a lot of stuff on there too, besides just show stuff. And we'd love to hear from you. So as David said, tonight we are talking about the episode Dramatis Persona. A very interesting episode, to say the least, especially for a first season episode. But before we get into that, David, just want to check in. How are you doing so far this week?
Doing good. Doing great. Still waiting on that bike to come in. It's just been delayed. They did notify us and say, yep, sorry, it's been pushed out. The boats haven't been, taken care of. They're still on a boat there in the Pacific. Other than that, just enjoying life. How about you?
About the same. I haven't ordered anything, but I'm trying to start this new thing, with the new year of when I've scaled back on buying just groceries for my house, right?
Right.
And that's just mainly because I feel like there's a lot of waste involved. I know what I like. I know what I like to eat. But then when it comes to actually making meals, because obviously it's not just me. I have a little one I have to take care of too.
Right.
I find that I'm not always thinking and buying everything I need to make a completely balanced meal.
Right.
So then things go to waste and I end up throwing stuff away. So what I've been trying to do is scale back my buying. And I'm going to actually sign up for one of those meal service things that, are out there. Blue Apron,
yeah.
HelloFresh, whatever. I'm still investigating which one I want to go with.
Right.
But I figure what I'll do is I'll give that a shot for a month or two, see how I like it with the presentation of the meals, the health content, what I can present for myself and for my kid,
right.
And then also look at the cost effectiveness of it. Me buying groceries every week versus this coming to my home every week.
Right.
And seeing which one seems to be more cost effective for me. I think, just based off of the research I've done so far, I think that if I totally scale back the buying except for certain necessities, I think that having this order system will actually end up saving me more money over time.
Yeah.
So, and plus it'll make me healthier. So, trying that. And then I signed up for this 6-week boot camp of sorts for myself. For the month of, January and then part of February here. So I'm trying to get everything to line up, basically, so that the 6 months of the boot camp, or not 6 months, wow, I would die. Six weeks of the boot camp will also coincide with the food ordering thing as well. Put those together, see what kind of comprehensive plan I can come up with and what happens.
Right.
Am I healthier? Do I lose weight? Do I gain weight? Am I stronger? Am I weaker? All those things, keeping track, seeing how I feel afterwards, and if it's a good fit, keep it going. Probably not the boot camp thing, because come on. It's in the name, boot camp. Who wants to do that forever?
No.
But, yeah. So that's kind of my going into the new year, trying to do things bigger and better.
There you go.
Calmed down from that whole let's become the world's strongest man. And it's more like, let's just become a healthy man in Texas.
Oh, no, man. You can't give up that dream already. We just got the new year going. You've already given up. Come on.
I feel like I was trying to fly before I could even crawl. So okay. I need to take some steps.
Take some steps. All right. Yeah. All right. Fair enough.
So
fair enough.
Yes, yeah, so the boot camp. We can think of the boot camp as like my first step into getting there. Because, yeah, jumping in full force, I'd probably die. So.
Right.
So, yeah. Yeah. Despite any years of training I've had beforehand, I've been out of it, I feel, long enough that jumping back in too soon would, really hurt me. So this is a good step.
Gotcha. Yeah, I've thought about doing one of those food ordering things before. I'm a single dude. I mean, I haven't looked into it, frankly. I don't know what the cost effectiveness of a single meal would be. I imagine, frankly, it wouldn't be very cost effective until you start getting into like 2, 3, 4 meals at a time. But I might be wrong. I don't know. Have you seen anything that do they indicate like one person?
Well, yeah. So I actually, the one I just checked out a couple days ago was HelloFresh. And HelloFresh will give you a breakdown of the number of meals per week. And you can order pretty much as many as you want. And it will tell you what the cost is of each meal. So, like, I was looking at a breakdown that was showing me the cost of a meal being around $3.20 per meal.
Right.
Okay. So, when I thought about it, I was just like, okay, $3.20 a meal is really not bad, especially if you're a person who eats out fairly regularly. Because even a semi-decent burger, like I'm going to use Whataburger as an example because it's a Texas staple, basically. Right. But even their most basic meal, which is the burger, the fries, and the drink, is still going to run you at least $7,
right,
if not more, depending on your sizing and everything else that you get. So, and that's just lunch,
right?
Yeah. If you're going there for lunch, So to think that you can get a nutritious, filling meal for $3.20, obviously the cost effectiveness is apparent.
Yeah.
But, that's also assuming, of course, that you eat every single meal. And I think that's what I'm looking at too, is will this be every meal? Will this just be lunch and dinner? Will this just be dinner? Whatever it is, trying to figure that out.
Right.
And then they show you the breakdown too, as to if you're just a single person, if you're a family of two, family of four. And then I also like that you can customize, like, do you want meats and veggies only? Do you want it to be health conscious? Do you want it to be pescatarian? Whatever it is, they have an option for you. So I really like the versatility, at least what they present so far. So, yeah, I'm looking forward to trying it out and getting kind of, I guess, facts on the ground, basically.
Yeah. And usually those services, when they send you the recipe, it's like a card. Like, you can keep the recipe and, like, just go buy the ingredients yourself from then on. So, yeah, I've definitely thought about doing it. You'll have to tell me how your experience is, because I may follow you into that. We're not sponsored, by the way. HelloFresh.
We are not sponsored by HelloFresh. Yes, let's just say we are not sponsored by.
We're open to the idea, though.
HelloFresh, Blue Apron, or any of the other food ordering things that are out there. Yes, we are open to it. If you want to, throw some coin our way, we'll take it. But we are not sponsored at this time. So there. We're just investigating, so we will see. But yeah, I'll be sure to share that with you. And I thought about that too. We get little, you get little recipe cards. And I'm a pretty accomplished cook, if I may say so myself.
Yeah.
So having a recipe guide probably helped me out too.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
The trick will be, the true trick for success for either of these, HelloFresh, Blue Apron, is whether or not my kid will eat it.
Yes. The true test of all food and parenting in general.
Will she eat it?
Does she have like a... Is she very adverse to veggies? Does she have a...
Oh, my gosh. Yeah. Of course she is. She's the typical young child. Mm-hmm. She eats... Her favorite foods are chips, fries,
of course,
barbecue sauce.
Sugar or grease of things, some kind, yeah.
Right. Cookies. Right. Yeah. You throw a vegetable in front of you, you would have thought that I had tried to cut her toe off by presenting her with broccoli. The reaction that you get, so visceral, so real.
Do you
so
do
real,
things like, put cheese on the broccoli to make it,
So that doesn't work.
It doesn't
just
work.
Seeing the broccoli on the plate
It's not that cheese is helping make the broccoli more enjoyable. It's that the broccoli has ruined the cheese. Is that the proper?
The broccoli has ruined the plate.
Yes.
It's everything on the plate is now forever. Exactly. So one trick, though, because she does like both macaroni and cheese, of course,
right,
and spaghetti. These are like easy go-tos for kids. Well, now they have a lot of pastas that you can buy that are made purely out of vegetables.
Yeah, right.
So what I've been doing is I'll make spaghetti or I'll make mac and cheese, but instead of using regular macaroni noodles, I'll use the vegetable-based noodles.
There you go.
So you're still getting your serving of vegetables. And then the other thing she likes, too, is shakes. She likes, you know, like milkshakes. So I've been augmenting her milkshakes with vitamin packets. So she'll get a strawberry shake, but then she'll have there's a multivitamin powder that I throw in there too.
Gotcha.
And by the time you top it off with strawberries and blueberries, and
she has no
idea, right? Yeah. And I'm like, that's right. You soak up all those vitamins and nutrients.
You're
going to get it one way or another. So, but yeah, so that's pretty much what we do. So this will be the next step is we'll Blue Apron, we'll HelloFresh pass the kid test.
There you go.
So
okay.
We'll see.
There you go. I imagine they have like a kid-friendly section on their website.
I haven't seen it. So far, I have not seen it.
No?
I've seen the family section. Right. But, you know, I think they kind of just assume with families, they're just going to be like, eat this.
Yeah, that's
true. You get no dessert until you eat it.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, that's fair. Yeah.
Anyway, back to Star Trek and Star Trek related news. Before we dive into the episode, I do want to do a little bit more housekeeping, some updates. Some people may already be aware, but I believe, if I read the thing right, the promo right, December is the last month that you'll be able to watch any Star Trek on Amazon. They are officially pulling it from Amazon Prime, for all you guys that have it. All the shows, they will no longer be able to be streamed on the Amazon platform. Only places that you'll be able to find it will be Hulu, Deep Space Nine, and Voyager, and
Next Gen
are still on Netflix.
Right.
And then, of course, you'll have Paramount Plus, where everything is. All the old shows and all the new ones.
Right.
And like I've said before in other episodes, this is a growing trend. We are seeing a consolidation of the Star Trek base, and it's looking more and more like Paramount Plus is going to kind of, you know, just hold the reins on that. I feel like it's going to come down to both Paramount Plus and Hulu being being the only two places that you can find it. They've already pulled a lot of shows from Netflix, and HBO Max never had it, and now it's all going to be gone from Amazon.
Right.
So yeah, that pretty much leaves Hulu and Paramount Plus.
Right.
So go ahead, get your subscription. It's really cheap right now. You might as well do it now while it is cheap. And then not only do you have access to your favorite ones, you have access to all the new ones. And there's more coming. Strange New Worlds is getting ready to start here in 2022. I believe the Section 31 show is on hold right now because Michelle Yeoh, who's supposed to be headlining that show, is off doing a series of movies, which one of them just dropped, A24. Saw the preview. Looks awesome.
Yeah.
We'll talk about that later.
Yeah, I think I know what you're talking about.
Yeah. So there's that. And then there's rumors of them doing a Starfleet Academy show. So that's kind of out there right now, just based off some stuff that happened on Discovery recently. Don't know if that's really going to kick off yet, but again, it's going to be exclusive to Paramount Plus when it does. So yeah, a lot of Trek. And then, of course, all the new shows are returning. Discovery, Picard, Lower Decks, Prodigy, all those are going to be there. So you might as well just get it and watch them all and enjoy it.
Yeah.
Okay. So yeah, if you were just watching it on Amazon, I'm sorry, but December looks like to be your last month to do so. And we're going to have to update your sounds. You are thoroughly stuck in the 70s, so we need to bring you forward. It's 2021, David. Almost 2022. Come on. All right. So now we finally get to talk about the reason that we're here. Star Trek Deep Space Nine, Dramatis Persona.
Let's do it.
All right. So
Let's have you recap it this time, shall we?
All right. I will recap it, and as an added surprise for people, as you all know, I pride myself on my memory. I love the fact that I can just recall a lot of stuff from this show, from these episodes. But in this case, I actually rewatched this episode recently.
Great. Okay.
So we're going to be doing this. It still will be from memory, but this is the memory from like a couple of days ago. Like, I think I watched this Sunday or Monday.
Right. One of those days. How'd you end up watching this one? Were you just kind of randomly picking out episodes and this one came up?
I was definitely in the mood to watch some Star Trek, and I had actually meant to watch The Witcher, but then I realized they hadn't released a new season yet at the time when I was going to watch it. And I was like, well, I'm already here on Netflix, so right. I might as well. And there it was. And I was like, you know what? I know this is the next episode. I'm just going to watch it. So I did.
Yeah.
So, this episode is, it opens up with Sisko's in his office, and Kira kind of barges in. And she's all hot and bothered about this freighter that is requesting to dock at the station. It's a Valerian freighter.
Mm-hmm.
Is it?
Yep.
You know, yeah, Valerian.
Yep.
And, the Valerian freighter wants to dock at the station, but Kira is all up in arms because apparently the Valerian traders used to trade a certain material that was used to make weapons by the Cardassians. And of course, the Cardassians are our kind of big our enemy that we haven't really seen a whole lot of yet
right.
in the show. But the Cardassians had occupied Bajor for the past 50 years, brutalizing its citizens, and of course, anybody who's had any kind of positive association with the Cardassians is looked, you know, very negatively upon by the Bajorans. So she thinks that the Valerians are still running this
Dolomide.
She thinks they're still running it to the Cardassians, and they're going to be using it to make weapons, and she wants to put a stop to it. She comes to Sisko asking him for assistance. Sisko's like, yeah, I'll help you, but you need to give me proof first. And she doesn't have any. So she gets a little upset that he's not ready to really just kind of jump on board and let her do whatever she wants.
Right.
But he promises her that if she can bring him proof, he will do everything he can through the Federation to stop this trade.
Right.
So now she sets off to go and find said proof. She's in ops. Dax is there. O'Brien's there. And Jadzia gives O'Brien an update about his wife. Keiko is a teacher on the station, and she has taken all of her students on a field trip. And she has given Dax is giving him an update that they've made it to wherever they're going for this field trip. And, you know, O'Brien says something about, you know, how stressful that must be, take a bunch of unruly school children on a field trip, which I'm sure it probably was. At the same time, this is when we see Odo. He pops up, and he is now giving information to Kira about the Valerians and the captain and first officer, what they've been up to.
Right.
And that was the information that apparently she had asked him for. As they're all talking about all this, and Valerians are all the big buzzword right now, the wormhole opens.
Mm-hmm.
Jadzia gets, you know, some sensor information that the wormhole is, you know, in flux or whatever. Wormhole opens and out pops a Klingon ship.
Mm-hmm.
And from the Klingon ship, before they can really do anything to determine, like, if anybody's alive or anything like that's going on, the ship seemingly blows up. But right before it blows up, somebody transports from the Klingon ship into ops,
right.
where after uttering the word victory, he dies. So now everybody's like, what's the mystery? What's he saying victory for? All that other kind of stuff, right?
Right.
Bashir is like, yeah, he's been shot up way too many times. There's nothing we can do to save him. And again, Klingon dies. So then they go through the process of identifying the dead Klingon, what the name of the ship was, what their mission was, and everybody's just kind of like thrown through a loop because they're like, this doesn't make any sense. The Klingons weren't on a warrior combat mission. This was like a science survey So who were they fighting? What does victory mean?
Right.
Sisko then sends Dax and O'Brien, our two scientists, out to try to find basically like the black box
right.
of the Klingon ship and figure out what was going on. They go out, they recover the black box, which basically contains the logs of the crew and what was going on, what they were doing on their last mission. And they download this into the system, into the station system, and it's going to take a while before they can compile the records and review the logs to see, you know, what was going on.
Right.
But while all this is happening, everybody seems to be acting strangely. Like, little bits of their personalities are being, like, amped up a little bit. Mm-hmm. Dax is way more absent-minded and kind of, like, lost in her own history a bit.
Right.
Than before. Sisko seems to be a little bit more on edge than he was beforehand. And O'Brien is kind of like overprotective is the word I'm going to use for now.
That's a good one. Yep.
So then, while this is going on, Odo is doing his own investigation as to why the ship blew up. He knows they had stopped at Deep Space Nine before they went through the wormhole. He knows they spent a good deal of time in Quark's. He goes to Quark. He asks Quark what he knows about the ship. Of course, Quark tries to dissemble a bit, and he doesn't want to kind of relay what he knows. But Odo gives him a veiled threat of pulling a work crew from the holosuites, which were in need of repair. And this is enough to kind of straighten Quark up. He tells Odo just a little bit, but it doesn't really lead anywhere. It doesn't really mean anything
right.
about their mission. Just that they were on a glorious mission, which is what Klingons always say for everything. So, again, it's kind of a nothing. So Odo kind of, he takes the information, goes to leave, but before he leaves, he has like some kind of weird spasm attack, and his head does this weird, cool, like split flip thing, and he like passes out
right.
in the doorway of Quark's. So then when the, that's when we have, of course, our commercial break. We rejoin the episode with Odo in the infirmary. He wakes up as Bashir is scanning him with some kind of device, and they have a pretty funny exchange, in my opinion, because Bashir's like, "How do you feel?" He's like, "Fine." He's like, "How am I?" He goes, "I don't know. You tell me." You know, I don't know anything about you.
Defies all expectations or something. Right. Yeah.
Yeah. He's like, "I don't know anything about you. So you tell me. If you're fine, then you're fine." I'm like, "Wow, I need more doctors like you, because I mean, that would smooth out so many issues so many times." But so yeah, he declares Odo fine. Odo gets up to leave, but before he leaves, Bashir's like, "How do you feel about, you know, the tension in the air, you know, what's going on?" And he's like, "What are you talking about?" And Bashir kind of, you know, intimates that there is something brewing, something's in the works
right.
on the station, you know. So Odo's kind of put off a little bit, but he leaves and
right.
just kind of leaves the doctor to his own musings, right? We're then back in Sisko's office. Kira comes in. She's all excited because now she has proof, because the Valerian stopped at this place where they processed dolomite into weapons-grade dolomite, which is proof positive that they're going to be trying to sell this weapons-grade dolomite to the Cardassians. And she wants to board the ship. She wants to seize the cargo. She wants to do all these things. And Sisko is like, "No." And this infuriates her, which
right.
I have to admit, I love. Sisko just being a jerk.
Yeah.
Just, I don't know.
And he's
really
hiding
just
something as she comes
yeah.
in. Yeah.
He's like leaned over the desk, right? He just didn't want her to see what he was doing, you
right.
know? So it's great. Like, all of this is just, to me, is just fantastic, the way that they're acting. O'Brien and Dax are still working on the ship logs.
Right.
They put everything into the system, and they're trying to let the system compile it, because there's something wrong. Like, the information is very degraded. So the system is kind of having to put pieces together to figure out what's going on.
Right.
Let's see. Odo goes back to a security office where he encounters Kira. Right. And Kira is like being all sweet and generous and kind of creepy. Like, yeah. It's like it's a sadistic line she's running. And she's talking about their past and how well they work together. And she's just so tired of Sisko and Starfleet and them not doing, you know, things her way. And she's just like, you know, if you were in charge, how would you run the station? What would you do? And she basically is like, unless Starfleet will send somebody that
we can control,
basically they can control, right? They yeah. can control. Then they're going to have a real fight on their hands. She was hoping to count on Odo's support.
Right.
Odo like tacitly agrees, but he doesn't like fully commit to anything.
Right.
He walks the line pretty well.
He realizes something's up. Yeah.
Yeah. And he realizes something up, and he's realizing that it all kind of started when they were downloading these logs, when this Klingon boarded the ship.
Right.
So something's up. So now he's trying to get access to the records. He does so, and he's trying to figure out what's going on there. Meanwhile, while that's happening, Kira is now also trying to recruit Dax. Mm-hmm. She meets Dax in
Quark's
bar, starts to kind of intimate that there's potential for a mutiny, which Quark overhears. She right. grabs Quark, she throws him into his own bar, and he falls to the ground and everything yeah. else. So then we see Quark going to Odo's office to complain. He's got a nice thick
neck brace.
Silver neck brace on, yeah. acting like Kira just, you know, tried to tear his head off is yeah. what
he's
he
all
says.
Talking as if in a strained voice, as if his right. larynx has also been busted or something. Yeah.
So he goes to, he goes to Odo. He tells Odo about his run-in with Kira and them plotting and everything else. Odo is obviously up in his own, his hackles are raised. He knows something is going on, and he's trying to figure out what, and, you know, he then leaves his office, and as he leaves, that's when we realize that Quark was kind of putting on a show for him,
right.
because he gets up and he follows Odo out, and he's way more vigorous than a man should be in a neck brace,
yep.
you know? So, he goes to find Sisko. And that's when he encounters a security officer stationed outside of Sisko's quarters.
Yes, yep.
And he's like, oh, O'Brien, Chief O'Brien posted me here.
Right.
But anyway, he goes in and he finds Sisko is like drawing or something.
Right.
He's got this big board in front of him. And he's telling Sisko he thinks that something's going on, but Sisko doesn't care.
Right.
You know? And then he gets super excited. He's like, what do you think? And he shows him the thing that he was drawing. And he's like, what is it? He's like, it's a clock. And he's just, I'm like, oh, yeah, he should know that from your design, okay. right? So Odo is realizing, okay, something is weird here.
Super wrong.
Yeah, Sisko doesn't care. He's being super reclusive. What's up?
O'Brien's in the captain's office.
He goes to the captain's office. He finds Odo. He finds O'Brien in there, and he asks for some information from O'Brien. And O'Brien's like, "Of course, Constable. Don't we always take care of you?" He's kind of trying to schmooze him the same way that Kira was
right.
earlier in the office. And it's just, again, it's weird.
Right.
He also says that
we know that Kira is trying to form a mutiny, but we'll take care of it. We're not threatened
yeah,
by
don't,
her.
Don't worry about it. We got right. this. He goes back to his office. He finds Kira there. Once again, this is when she does her intimating. Be on our side. Wants Odo to pledge his allegiance. All this other kind of stuff. She leaves. Odo tries to contact Starfleet, but can't.
Right.
Finds out that it's been blocked by Major Kira. So then he tries to contact the Bajoran Council, finds he can't because it's been blocked by O'Brien.
Right.
Both sides have effectively cut each other off from their respective PowerPoints.
Right.
So, while Sisko's off building his clock and O'Brien is like trying to get him to realize there's more going on here than meets the eye, we need to get off the station, rally a force, all this other kind of stuff.
Right.
Odo goes to the infirmary. He confronts Bashir and says something's going on. Right. And he realizes that Bashir is affected, but right. not necessarily in the same way that everybody else is. So right. he's like, hey, figure out what could be affecting everybody else, and also figure out a way to shut it down, whatever it is. And he basically tells the doctor that they're on the same team, and ultimately they could be the ones in control. But of course, you have to be able to control whatever is affecting everybody else, because you don't want somebody to do something stupid like blow up the station. So Bashir agrees, and he determines what it is that's going to be affecting the crew.
Right.
Now, while all this is going on, tensions between Kira's faction, which is Kira and Dax, and Sisko's faction, which is Sisko and O'Brien, have now reached kind of like their turning point.
Right.
Sisko is in ops. Someone tries to poison Sisko in ops. He beats the guy half senseless. And right before he can use whatever little injecty thing that he was going to use on Sisko, Sisko, again, he beats him up. And Sisko takes the thing. It's going to inject the guy when he's stopped by Evil Kira, which right. I don't know any other way to describe her. She's Evil Kira. O'Brien is able to effect an emergency beam out. He gets them off of the out of ops. They were supposed to be near the docking ring for the Valerian ship, but Kira had already enacted her plan of stopping those direct transports. So they ended up like nearby, but not close.
Right.
They take off their comm badges and they begin to try to move through the station to
well,
get
Odo,
there.
They contact Odo, and Odo.
I was going to say.
Yeah, sorry.
They first contact Odo. Odo's like, sure, I'll help you out. I'll deactivate the force field. It'll take you to this cargo bay where you can, you know, make your rendezvous.
Yeah.
So they're like, great, Odo's on our side. They drop their comm badges and they take off. Back in ops, Kira and Dax are like, why are they still hanging out in this corridor? And then Kira realizes they took their comm badges off. And then Dax is like, hey, someone is deactivating our force fields. And I'm like, who could be doing that? Again, Kira clues in. It's Odo.
Right.
Now she's upset because she thinks that Odo, the person that she had won to her side,
right.
is now not on her side. She contacts Odo and she's like, what are you doing? And he's like, oh, hey, not what you think.
Right.
I have basically led them into a trap right. waiting for you in this cargo bay.
Right.
And she's like, oh, great. Perfect. And again, she's all really, really weird. Like, her voice just is really creepy
yeah.
during this part. So she and Dax go to the cargo bay to meet up with Sisko and O'Brien, who are now trapped in right. said cargo bay. Sisko is real jittery. You know, his hands are clicking around, you know,
yeah.
and they're trying to find their way out, but the place is completely locked down. There's no escape. Kira shows up with Dax, and she's like, oh, don't worry about Odo. He'll be along soon. This is all his doing, basically.
Right.
Odo and the doctor show up. So now everybody's in the cargo bay. Sisko, O'Brien, Odo, Bashir, Kira, and Dax. Everybody that's affected by whatever, except for Odo, of course, is there. Odo enacts the security procedure that he had developed with the doctor to drive out or eliminate whatever unknown force is affecting our senior officers.
Right.
We watch as this, it's basically like a sound wave is emitted, and then they're this energy departs their brains
right.
and is hovering above them. Everybody kind of returns to normal. Odo tells everybody to hold on to something. He hits the button on the cargo bay door, opens the cargo bay to space, and the energy is sucked out. Where, of course, since it's in space, it can't hold cohesion and it dissipates. And now everybody is back to normal. And Sisko, or not Sisko, but Odo ends it with, welcome back, everybody.
Yeah.
Because everybody was, you know, now they're normal selves.
Right.
So then, you know, we don't really see it, but we know that, you know, everybody gets a little updates as to what was going on, what was happening, all that kind of stuff. We end the episode with Sisko and Kira in their office, in Sisko's office. Mm-hmm. Sisko is showing off the clock that he built, which is incredibly elaborate. And from what we see of it briefly, have to say, very beautiful. I would love to own that thing. So if anybody out there listening knows where I can find it, let me know.
Yeah.
Kira asks if he really built it. He's like, yeah, apparently. Don't know how I did it, but I did it. And then she apologizes for the mutiny, even though she's not technically at fault.
Right.
And he's like, I guess we can let it go this
This
time.
sucks.
That classic veiled Sisko threat comes
Right.
through in the end. And she smiles and leaves, and Sisko focuses the tension on the clock. And that's the episode. That's
Boom.
it.
There you go.
So
Yeah.
I was going to ask you how I did, but considering I just watched this episode, I feel like I was pretty thorough.
Yeah, I would say so. Yeah. Yeah, I thought this was a fun episode, a good episode. Yeah, this is on the level of I think I mean we've seen this type of episode on The Next Generation. There's plenty of episodes we could think of where the crew is somehow affected by a force outside of the ship and it kind of changes their personality for the episode. One of the ones I'm thinking of is the one where Troy is made to like there's an ambassador dude who comes on and he comes on with his mother, he says, this old lady, and the old lady dies, and then he like gets intimate with Troy and like but then Troy starts acting weird and she starts aging prematurely and it turns out that he had like he was an ambassador, but like all of his negative emotions he was putting on these women that he would have dragged around with him. He'd pretend that they were his mother, but he would basically kill them off with this transfer of his emotions to them. And then there are plenty of other episodes. There's another episode where some spirit beings that are like prisoners on this planet possess like four of the crew.
Troy. It's Troy, Data, and O'Brien.
O'Brien and I think
Nope, those
who
were the
is it?
three.
No, there's
It
four of
was
them.
those
There's a
three. Well,
four.
there were four of them in the away team, but only three of them get
Oh,
possessed because
right.
Riker was in the away team with them, but Riker gets hurt.
That's
He breaks
right.
his arm, and because
That.
of the pain receptors, the alien can't inhabit his body.
That's right.
And that's ultimately how they drive those aliens out of our other three, is to cause them intense pain.
Right. So this
So,
is the second time then that O'Brien's been kind of possessed by an alien
yeah.
entity. In this case, it wasn't an actually alien. They tell us that the basically the Klingons had gone into the Gamma Quadrant and were like researching, but they came across some sort of energy archive
Energy orbs,
sword
yeah.
things, and they the theory is that they somehow got affected by those orb the energy orbs, and that when the guy when the Klingon came through the wormhole, like basically they all killed each other on their Klingon ship, and then he was the last one to survive, and when he got to Deep Space Nine, he somehow passed it on, kind of like a virus of some kind. But Odo, being the changeling that he is, that scene where he like falls unconscious because his mind or like his brain was attacked and like his skin and his head all do that weird jiggly thing, and then he falls down unconscious. Like that's the moment where they tried possessing him, but he was unaffected or something.
Because Odo doesn't have a brain. Remember,
Right.
he's a changeling. Everything
Yes.
he is an approximation. He is
Right.
he's a copy, basically. He's not real.
Right. Yeah. And that was a great explanation for why one of them wasn't affected, because he's not the same biology as the rest of our crew. So yeah, he's not humanoid. He's just simulating a humanoid. So, but yeah, I have to say, like, the character starting to act different was just kind of fun, because you know the actors got to play their characters, but under like slightly different, like. What's the, as you said, like the evil version of Kira? What's the twisted version of Bashir? You know, what if O'Brien like was actually a hardcore like military type? Or what if Sisko was a guy who didn't care and tinkered in his apartment when he was bored?
Well, and the perfect thing about that is it's like they took a certain attribute of each character and just amped it up, right?
Right.
And something that we've talked about many times in our own podcast here is, in particular with Sisko, his nature is kind of like to stand back and kind of like look up. He's like looking down on the situation. He's looking, from that outsider's point of view.
Right.
And so they kind of took that, and he went full on recluse, right? Like he stopped caring entirely. He was purely focused on this clock, and I mean, he still wanted to maintain his power, his control,
Right.
but otherwise, he just didn't want to be bothered. He locked himself away in his quarters. He let O'Brien run things, but it was, it was still his station. Right. And he became violent whenever anybody suggested otherwise.
Right.
You know, but that was it. Other than that, he was completely hands off. And right. then, yeah, O'Brien, we know he has a lot of experience. We know he has a military background despite being an engineer.
Right.
But yet, all of a sudden, he was way more commanding. He was way more hands on.
Right.
And he was just, again, he was more dialed in
right.
on the combat side of things
yes.
than anything else. Right. You know, yeah, Julian's investigative nature as a doctor kind of turned him into the paranoid, you know, the paranoid yeah. persona there.
Well, it was funny because yeah. Odo says, the reason I knew something was off with you is because when does Dr. Bashir care about station politics? That's what he right. says, to that effect. Right. It was like, yeah, yeah, Bashir.
You have a point.
Yeah, yeah. You know something's off, though. The first person to start acting strange is Dax, because when she and O'Brien go to get on the runabout, she's all giggly and, like, can't pay attention.
Right.
And then when they're on the runabout, O'Brien starts asking her, like, you know where your loyalties lie, right? Like, and, like, you're friends with Kira, aren't you? And she's like, oh, yeah, I mean, if you say so, I guess I am. And so later on, when it turns out that, like, she's allied herself with Kira, it's like Bashir gives the little, like, syringe thing that Sisko – it was meant for Sisko, but that Sisko tries using on the guy who attacks him – like, Bashir and Dax, like, betray the Federation commander in favor of the Bashir, or the Bajoran Kira, which I thought was a little interesting in terms of, like, you know, what's the reasoning behind well, that, other than, you know, Dax was so, just suddenly a little.
So I always took.
Absent minded, but.
Right. Well, I always took Dax and her association with Kira as more reluctant than anything else, because she's never really forceful about it. Right? She seems more preoccupied with her own past. You know, even when she's talking right. to O'Brien on the runabout, she's telling all these stories about Sisko and what they used to get up to when she was Curzon and everything right. else. So I almost feel like the whatever was affecting them didn't have the same effect on her as it would have the others, because she is essentially a shared consciousness.
Yeah.
So it's trying to affect way too many.
Yeah, no, that's definitely fair. The others are right. like, they're suddenly hyper-partisan. My point is like, you would think that Dax would be partisan toward the Federation or toward even Sisko with the relationship right. they have. Yeah.
But see, we see her later on when she's in the bar with Kira.
Right.
And before Quark overhears, she's doing it again. She's telling these stories about a past life
right.
and going into all that stuff, which to me just kind of shows that she's not necessarily split loyalty so much as she is a split personality. Like, she's got so many things influencing her that it's almost like, you know, if Sisko had been around her, I think she would have still gone with him. But right. notice, she never is with Sisko the whole time. She's either with O'Brien or she's with Kira, and or she's by herself. She's right. never with Sisko. And I believe, like, if they had done that, then yes, she would have stayed in line with Sisko. She was basically just following whoever was in power,
right.
which is kind of what Bashir is doing too. Bashir is playing both sides.
Right.
In fact, he's playing three sides. He's obviously aligned himself with Kira. He's
right.
not interfering with Sisko and whatever Sisko's got going on.
Right.
And he's made his secret deal with Odo.
Right.
So he's kind of just out there doing, like, whomever, you know, like, whomever I think is going to position me
right.
in the most comfortable of positions. So I wouldn't necessarily say that he was betraying the Federation. He just thought he was, in his case, doing what he needed to do to maintain his own power. Right.
Yeah.
And that's why he falls in lockstep with Odo so quickly, because Odo never loses it. He
right.
never loses his cool the whole way through, and I think he realizes that.
Right.
So I wouldn't necessarily say that either one of these two betrayed Starfleet so much as they were just going with whoever was the strongest and that was around.
Oh, yeah. No, I think that's probably the best explanation overall, certainly with Dax. Like, no one ever approaches Dax. I mean, O'Brien kind of approaches Dax, but it's Kira who gets her really when she's really deep into her, you know, remembering things about the past, and Kira's like, you're on my team, right? But yeah, the scene where Odo and Bashir are talking, and Odo is like talking down to a simpleton. We're going to do this because this is how we maintain power, right? That was hilarious. That was a great moment. Like, Odo knows what's going on. Odo's not really the scheming type necessarily. You know, he's so just kind of straightforward. So that when he is having to, you know, manipulate other people, this was a perfect situation for him. Hey, Bashir, this is what we're going to do, right? Yeah, there you go. There you go.
Hey, hey, Dum Dum, please pay attention. Yeah. I need you to do this for me.
Yeah.
And he even says, well, why would you want to, if something's affecting them, why would you want to, you know, lose that control? That, and he's
yeah.
like, well, do you want them to blow up the station? He's like, oh, yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, that makes sense. I see you're thinking, you know, yeah.
Oh, Bashir. So, oh, goodness.
Which, you know, once again, you know, we know that Odo isn't affected. We see that it, whatever it is attempts to affect Odo, but is unsuccessful. But
right.
We also, basically, the other person who's not affected, of course, of our main cast is Quark.
Yes.
Quark is Quark. He's him the whole time.
Right.
So something must be up with that Ferengi multi-lobe brain he's got rolling around in those up
there.
Well,
the initial explanation is that everyone who was in ops was affected. I don't remember if Odo was in ops at the time, but he certainly isn't attacked until he's in Quark's. So, yeah, it would make...
He is in ops. He is in ops when the Klingon beams in.
He is, right. Okay.
And dies.
Right.
He is in ops then. Yeah, so I guess that makes sense because I've wondered about that for years. So I was like, I mean, why is Quark not affected? Because when we see Odo, you know, fall out, basically, he's in Quark's, you know?
Yeah.
So I was like, why wasn't the next person Quark? But, yeah.
It would have been hilarious to see Quark, like, turn Quark into a partisan of some kind, like, make him allied with Sisko, of all people. That would be hilarious. You gotta defend me from these Bajorans, man. You know, these Bajorans are crazy. I don't know, something like that. Yeah, we didn't see anything from Jake or Nog or any of them, but
this was not a kid episode. This was definitely not a kid episode.
Yeah,
which I'm glad for, because I mean, I could just see Kira, you know, especially being so creepy and sadistic, she wouldn't have had any problem with taking Jake hostage and, you know,
right,
doing something to it. You know, so I'm glad we didn't have to worry about that. I'm just not a fan of kids being held hostage.
Oh yeah,
in any regard, I don't want to see it. So right. Yeah. So I'd like to ask, of course, who do you think gave the standout performance of our altered bizarro
versions of themselves?
Crew? Yeah.
We haven't touched on one thing. When Sisko is with O'Brien and they're being confronted by Kira in the
cargo bay,
he turns around and he says, I give my leadership and my time and my energy and I gave of myself, and this is how I'm being treated. And he goes off on this monologue, which is just fantastic. It's a great moment, because it's like, this is not Sisko. Sisko's not one to go off in some dramatic monologue like this.
Right. The evil man is monologuing. Imagine that.
Yeah, exactly. I think Kira, though, does the best, like... She's the best twisted version of herself, because you know that she's kind of, you know, she grates with Sisko at the beginning of this episode. She wants Sisko to do something, and he tells her no straight to her face, and she's not happy about it. And so her motivation makes the most sense. Out of everyone, like Sisko suddenly not caring, or O'Brien suddenly being this hyper, again, militaristic kind of type, or whatever. Like, Kira's the one who makes the most sense. Her change is more subtle, but also the most fun, because it's like, it basically means like she's let loose. In this episode, the darker version of herself, her dark persona, which I guess is what the point of this episode
Dramatis
is.
Dramatis persona, you know, yes.
It's the one that comes forward the most. And you can see, like, you know, we had that episode with the Kai where she's like, I didn't want to be a military person. I just had to do what I had to survive. And then in the episode Progress, you know, she and Sisko really connected. And, you know, he said, you know, I like you. I want you to do well. I don't want you to suffer or be hurt. So in this episode, for her to basically kind of like throw all of that away, and now she's just going full throttle after what she wants, she was probably the most fun character to see. Sisko being the most quirky character to see. So.
Okay.
I don't know if quirky is quite the right word, actually.
No,
I would say
crazed.
Yeah. Yeah. The fact that he's building an alien clock. Like, the fact that he doesn't destroy that thing at the end, like, toss it from himself, like, I don't want this near me.
Hey, but it was beautiful. Like, did you really take a look at that thing?
Oh, I know.
And then he, like, turns it on, and there's, like, little parts in the middle that spin.
And one part's,
and it,
like,
lights up.
It's kind of like a pendulum going back and forth. Yeah. Like, I actually I wanted it to make sense. I was actually disappointed at the end that it doesn't actually, like, I couldn't make sense of it. Like, if I could make sense of it by the end.
They just don't show it enough. Right, they just don't show it enough.
Like, well, yeah, but I mean, like
it's, man,
If at the very end, though, my point is, like, at the very end, like, they turn it around and, like, oh my gosh, that's a clock. Not some, you know, basically it looks like a nice artsy statue with, like, moving parts. But, like, if you could look at it and, like, he hangs it on his wall or he leaves it on his desk from now on and, like, that is a clock, I would be, like, 10 times more interested in it. Right now, it's like it was a quirky thing for this one episode, and it's probably going to be gone.
Well, but mild spoiler, it does not go away. We do see it again.
There
so
we go.
It's,
okay.
It's there.
All right.
It's there. He does not get rid of it. So that's all I'm going to say. Right. It's there.
Right.
But it also clues us into a certain aspect of Sisko's character that perhaps. Well, I know that before then we hadn't seen before. And right. That's the fact that the man, he's a builder. He's very hands-on. Like, he went from plan, because, you know, in one scene, we saw him sketching the schematics for the clock.
Right.
To completed product.
Right.
So, clearly, there is a... He's got a next-level order of thinking that we haven't been totally clued in on just yet.
So you think that's Sisko, not the alien presence affecting his mind?
No. See, I thought about that. But I believe that, especially considering what we see of the Klingon.
Right.
I think that this, whatever that they're affected by, I think it just amps up certain parts of their personality.
Okay, I was going to say.
And that's why that's why they seem so singularly focused in certain regards.
Right.
And like we've already clued in, like, you know, Dax, she kind of gets lost in her own history. Kira becomes way more militaristic than she's ever been before, and she's hyper-focused. You know, I think that this is something of Sisko that is, you know, we don't really see a whole lot of. Right.
Yeah.
And but we see it in ways, like, you have to think of other aspects of the man's character. Like, for example, him being a single parent.
Right.
And he's so involved in taking care of Jake and building Jake as a person, you know? And so to see him focus this way as well on something else, I just really appreciated that arc for him. Like, just showing that there was another facet of the character that we're seeing in the first season, no less, that we don't really see in a lot of other characters in the first season. Like, if you compare the character development that we see in the Deep Space Nine characters in their first season versus the TNG characters in their first season, wholly lacking. Wholly lacking. I feel like TNG didn't really take off with the personal development until really the second season. And even then, it was like, it was kind of stilted at first. It took them a minute to get there.
Right.
But Deep Space Nine really jumps into it. And I feel like, because of that, I think that's why Deep Space Nine probably has the strongest first season out of any Trek show, even to date. Even the newer shows, I don't feel like they can touch Deep Space Nine when it comes to giving you very realistic, personal stories of our crew members to make you connect with them. I mean, episode one was dealing with Sisko's PTSD. Then we have Kira dealing with her past being from going from terrorist to official officer to liaison between the Bajoran government and the Federation, and her trying to put that more chaotic part of her past down. You know, O'Brien coming into a more family setting. Dax. Bashir, like all of them coming from these very, again, very realistic places and having to.
Okay. So this is minute 53.
Having to adjust and make it was just always amazing to me to see.
And
I just really enjoy the fact that this is something that they were able to keep going. for so long, you know? So I mean, I just really enjoyed that so much. And I like, again, seeing that here for Cisco, that he's not just a commander. He's not just a father. This man has legit hobbies and skill.
Right.
You know? So, yeah, I'm just like, I want to see more of that. And this is only the first season. It's like, you have nowhere else to go but up from here. It's like, that's an amazing foundation to start with.
Right.
You know, going forward.
I would go back for just a moment and say that when I initially saw this episode, I thought Cisco was having these clock designs imprinted on him by this energy. But talking with you and rethinking it, you know, if you think that Cisco actually has that capacity in and of himself, then maybe what happened with these orbs, this energy, is that it basically turned on elements of their personality to 11. So if Kira was already at an 8 with her, like, I need to be, you know, a fighter, then turning it up to 11 is only a smaller change than for, like, Cisco, who maybe has, like, turned his, like, in his creativeness down to, like, a level 4. So from 4 to 11 was a bigger jump for him than for Kira.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think that makes sense.
Well, and again, it tracked back to episode 1. What do we see of Kira in episode 1? She is upset that the Bajoran government has invited Starfleet in the first place.
Right.
She very much feels like they should be in control, that the Bajorans are ready to step out on their own and handle the situation. They don't need the Federation.
Right.
Now we see this episode where basically that's exactly her point throughout the whole thing. She is upset with Cisco for not letting her go on there and conduct the search the way that she wants to and seize that ship and seize their cargo. She goes to Odo and that's her complaint. Unless Starfleet gives us someone we can control, we're ready to just kick them out entirely and we'll do this ourselves. And you want to kick Quark out, you kick him out. You know, that's what she says. Yeah. So, yeah, again, it's not necessarily... Like, we never hear anything that makes us think that this is, like, alien dialogue or anything like that. It's very much grounded in the problems that they have right then.
Right.
It's just their attitudes about them, again, they're just dialed up considerably.
Right.
And that's her main upset. That's the main split between the two of them, is she wants to take a certain action, and she's only stopped from doing so because Cisco is in charge as the Federation officer.
Right.
Yeah, this brings back the whole weird dynamics of the situation. Yeah, how do you explore the diplomatic conflicts of, you know, this is our property, yeah, but I'm the one who's put in charge. Yeah, that'd be tough.
I would imagine this is a lot like, you know, conflicts that we would see in our own government when we send ambassadors or officers or military personnel over into other lands, and they're asked to, you know, kind of officiate over that area and to establish kind of rule of law in that area. I bet you they have very similar conversations where people who, you know, grew up there, lived there, know the people, and feel like, you know, now they've ousted the big bad, whomever they are.
Right.
They feel like they should be in charge, and yet here we come, and we're imposing our ideals, our laws, our government on foreign soil.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, and trying to find workarounds for that. I feel like that would be probably the closest parallel that we would have to understanding that.
Yeah.
You know, interesting that I don't think I've ever really read any stories or anything based off of things like that, but I imagine they would be both incredibly complex and entirely worthwhile.
Oh, yeah. In terms of just a story structure, just like a story?
Yeah, you know, just an understanding, like, the negotiations that went into place in order to get, like, I mean, right now what comes to mind is, of course, you know, the takedown of Saddam Hussein, right?
Right.
And then the trying to establish a new government there.
Right.
And I know that we had a hand in creating that. And trying to, like, listening to the stories that would have, that were basically laying the groundwork there.
Right.
To establish what government comes after the fall of his regime.
Right.
And then how do you also transition that power from the officers and military men and support teams from our government and from other world governments who all kind of swooped into that area to help stabilize the region, right?
Right.
And then eventually there's a time when they're going to leave, when they're going to pull out. How do you negotiate all of that, the imposition of a new government, to then the transition of powers, all that. I mean, like, I know sometimes it can seem really, like, boring from the outside, but, man, could you imagine living that and, like, being there and being, like, the officers that have to, like, uphold that? I mean, it would be terrifying, to say the least, yeah. I feel.
Oh, yeah. You know? Oh, yeah. Totally agree.
And, I mean, all that is still very recent, and a lot of it, I mean, is still going on. The fallout from the fall of Hussein and the rise of Al-Qaeda and the Taliban and all that is still very much going on. We just recently had, you know, the troop extraction from over there. We saw the people trying to get on the planes as they were departing, and not enough space on the planes as the Taliban was bearing down on those people, you know?
Super depressing seeing some of those, those images.
I mean, obviously, Star Trek, you know, dials that way, way down. Like, if that's, like, if that, like, let's say if that's a 10, like, the episode of that we're talking about here is, like, a negative 5.
Right.
So, you know, not close, but I'm just saying the allegory, I see it there, and I just, I would love to know more about that. Maybe we should, like, do our own little, like, side investigation. I'm sure NPR has, like, a bajillion stories. That's what NPR's good for.
Hey, we've got 20 years of stories from the Middle East and
that
situation over there. So, yeah. So there's plenty of stuff. And actually, just thinking about it, embassies are a perfect example of this. You know, the idea that this building is property and the soil and the boundary of these walls, like, that is land, like that's America, or that is, you are now in England, even though you're, the country overall is another country, but now you're in this little piece of land, now it's property of the other country, and that's all kinds of funky.
And it's such an interesting concept, because, I mean, it is until it isn't, right? It is the sole, you're on sovereign British soil, right up until that Afghan military strike force barges through your gate, and takes over that building, right? Yeah,
Tehran, I mean, baby.
Seventies, I mean, right? It is until it, I mean, heck, we even had, wasn't that Benghazi?
I mean,
we had the same thing going on there, you know. So, I mean, again, it is until it isn't.
Yeah.
So, exactly. I mean, we have the same. Yeah, I mean, like, Cisco is trying to hold on to it. A Cardassian-built station in Bajoran space run by the majority of the officers are Bajoran, except for what few, you know, Federation senior personnel officers, is there right now. So, yeah, I mean, it's his station right up until Kira says, nah, man, it's mine.
Yeah, you
know?
Exactly.
And that's kind of like the whole, their whole beef, you know, right. Like, she, you know, he becomes more and more crazed about holding on to power. As she is systematically taken over. And even, as you said, she even wins over some people to her side. You know, Dax is now on her side.
Right.
You know? So, yeah, interesting parallels.
Right.
I would love to see more of these stories. So, and this is the first season. This is the first season, guys. Like, you can't tell me this is not exciting stuff.
Oh,
in a first season show, we've gotten some pretty strong performances from our crew. And even as bizarre as this episode presents itself, the crew is inhabited by something that's affecting their personalities to such an extreme.
Right.
We've got some great stuff here.
Yeah.
You know, so can you imagine what we're going to learn through seasons 2, 3, all the way to 7?
Yeah.
Here.
Yeah.
So, of course, we can't end it without asking, who was the least impactful? Who could we have done without? Who do we not need to see in this episode?
I really feel like Dax is the one that gets it this time. I think this episode is a good example of her character throughout the entire first season. Oh, yeah, this is my past, and isn't it interesting, my past? And that's kind of who Dax is. Like, her past is interesting, but her present is kind of absent. I know you say that she's going to really turn into a great character in the later seasons, but I think this really crystallizes why her character is kind of suffered for the first season. She's just,
I'm gonna say, you need to have faith of the heart, David.
Oh yeah, no, I'm there. I'm waiting for that second, well, no, third I have to, season.
I have to say it because that's also a Star Trek reference, and for our listeners, they'll know exactly what I mean when I say that David needs faith of the heart, because it's a long road getting from there to here. So,
man, I feel like a lot of things are flying over my head right now.
They really are. They really are right now. And I love it. And I can't wait for you to get there one day. Maybe we'll talk about that. But yes, you just have faith, man. You'll get there.
Gotcha.
For me, I was going to say none of them. None of them get the least needed.
Oh, that's a chicken layout. Well,
now, hear me out. Of course, I would explain. The reason is, because like I said, as I've been saying here, all of them exhibit certain character traits that we see amped up, right?
Right.
So it's a great episode for kind of learning where their personal loyalties lie.
Right.
And if you remember these things, it will really help you as you watch the rest of the show.
Right.
Because each character displays something core to themselves here in this episode that we will see again and again in different ways
right.
throughout the show. So knowing that, because obviously I've seen this show like a bajillion times, knowing that, whenever I watch this episode, I'm always reminded of that. And I'm like, yeah, I can't wait because this plays into this, this plays into that, this does this. You know, so that's why for me, I'm going to say none of them. Now, I can understand if you have not, if people haven't watched as much as I have, you might not pick up on that. I could see why you would want to say Dax. But again, knowing what I know, I'm just like, yeah, this makes total sense. All this makes total sense. So to me, this is not a throwaway episode. There's not a throwaway character that exhibits anything here. So yeah, that's why I say all of them.
There you go.
Foreshadowing. Guys, go watch it. It's almost 30 years old. Go watch it. We're coming up actually on the 29th anniversary of Star Trek Deep Space Nine. So I believe that is January 4th.
Wow.
Yeah, January 4th will be the 29th anniversary of this show.
Will this episode drop by then, or will it have already passed by the time this episode drops?
Let me do a quick check.
Because that'll be important. I'm sure our viewers will want to know. Are they listening retroactively to that time and that anniversary date?
Okay, so, yeah, by the time this episode drops, we will have missed the anniversary by 3 days.
Okay, so happy anniversary, Deep Space Nine. So, yes. 29 years. Woo!
maybe we'll do something special. Before then, I mean, we'll have the episode, but maybe we'll do something else just as a special. Since this is what our show is about, it's Deep Space Nine, right?
Right, right.
Yeah. Actually, I already know what we're going to do.
Okay. You want to keep it a surprise?
Yes, for now. We'll keep it a surprise. Give me a chance to
work out
mull it over.
The kinks. Yeah.
Right. But we will do something special for that. So look forward to that on the anniversary of our beloved Star Trek Deep Space Nine.
Or at least slightly after.
Yeah, because that falls on like a Tuesday, I think. So
right.
Yeah.
Actually, so while we're talking about it, so that means that this show was Deep Space Nine a mid-season like replacement? Like, you know, if most shows, I mean, I don't know if that was true back then. Did they try and start in the fall? Like most shows, in my opinion, seem to try and start in the fall and. Like they have a mid-season finale in like December and they're off for like a month and then they come back.
So this is something that we've talked about before. The way that they do shows now is right. not how they used to do shows.
Oh, I'm sure. I mean, that was, again, 29 years ago. So
yeah. So, you know, the standard Star Trek format for the longest time was, you know, every season was a minimum of 20 episodes. Right. You had some shows that did more than that, some that were like 24, even 26 episodes, especially when they got really into like two-parters, you know? They kept that format all the way through to Enterprise, I believe. Even Enterprise has like that 20-episode format.
Right.
Then when that show ended, there was no Trek for like 10 years, 12 years.
Right.
And now the new shows do that new format of 5 episodes, then they'll take a break, then they'll do another 5. Or they'll do like 8 episodes, then they'll take a break, and then they'll come back and do like 3 or 4 more.
Right.
You know, and so, but all the seasons have been shrunk. So now they've gone from anywhere from 24 to 26 episodes down to like 13 to maybe 15.
Right.
If you're lucky.
Gotcha.
With this show starting in January, I really don't think it had anything to do with like trying to get it out during, you know, mid-seasons or sweeps weeks or anything like that. I really think they were trying to capitalize on the buzz of Next Generation. At the time when this show started, Next Generation was in its sixth season. And even right. that season, I believe they were like midway through the sixth season.
Right.
We see some of the officers from Deep Space Nine do pop up on Next Gen in that sixth, seventh season.
There's that one episode crossover where Dr. Bashir yeah. shows up. But I was disappointed that they didn't do more to crossover.
Right. Well, Dr. Bashir shows up, and then also we see later on the ship is docked at Deep Space Nine. The Enterprise is docked at Deep Space Nine. And we don't see anybody, but we see Picard and Crusher walking on the promenade.
Yeah, in that same episode. Okay. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yep, okay. Yep, yeah. So, yeah. So there was a lot that they were already kind of doing with these shows to kind of like, you know, branch off and move them through. Plus, they were already in the works for the first Star Trek movie featuring the Next Gen crew at this time. They were already like doing the story development.
That's First Contact, right?
Nope, it's Generations.
Generations, okay. Well, I still need to see the films, so.
Ah, okay, well, Generations is the very first film to feature the Next Gen crew.
Gotcha.
I would love to hear your review of that movie when you do get around to watching it, because so many things. In fact, let me know when you're going to watch it, because I actually have not watched that movie since it came out.
What?
Yeah.
Perry, the guy who watches Star Trek for fun, hasn't seen the Generations film in years?
And I will tell you why. The reason is, you've never seen it.
I haven't seen the movie.
You haven't seen the movie.
Yeah. Well, let me ask you this. I know that there is a thing about, like, what is it, the fifth or the odd numbered movies are good, but the even ones are bad. Does that fall in that category for you?
That would depend, because if you're counting the movies with the original crew, the, you know, Kirk and Spock and all them, they did six movies, so then Generations would be the seventh.
Right.
So that would technically mean this movie should be a flop. I don't think it's that great of a movie. don't get me wrong.
Sure.
But that's not why I haven't watched it.
Okay.
That's not why.
Do you want to save reason for when I get my
review? Well, I was
going
to say, I realize now I can't tell you why, because it's a plot. It's a plot point of the movie.
Okay.
And it would ruin it for you. But right. yes, there is a definite reason. There is. All I'll say is there is something that happens that I don't like. I've never liked. And because of that, I don't watch this movie anymore.
Gotcha. Okay, well.
So, yeah.
Maybe I'll try and, I don't know. I don't know when I'll get around to it, but when I do, I'm sure we'll have a lot to discuss.
Yes, we will. We yeah. definitely will. Okay. But yeah, anyway, this show, again, the anniversary is coming up. We'll do something special for that. Coming up on the end of our broadcast here, anything you would like to add or that we haven't talked about that we need to touch base on real quick?
I don't think so.
All right. Well, guys, as always, you can always go back and watch these episodes before you listen to our show. We always encourage that you do so. And we also encourage that you follow us. You can find us as The Fire Caves, a Star Trek Deep Space Nine podcast. We are on Facebook. We are on Twitter. I'm on Twitter pretty much all the time, so if you ever want to send me questions, comments, concerns, please do so there. I will definitely answer you. you can listen to our podcast on Amazon, on Spotify, pretty much anywhere that you listen to podcasts, you can find us. And so, again, we encourage you to do so. So, other than that, all I want to say is happy 2022 to all of you. Hope this year is just successful, if not more so, than the last one. And keep listening to us in 2022, guys. We'll see you then.
All right, thank you. Talk to you later.